You're listening to TSN 1200.
Now to Bouchard. He took a swat at it, couldn't get it in. In front of the net, scores! A bank shot off the netminder!
Lowry back for Stanley, huge save! Stanley with a great shot, a big save that time by Talbot. Back the other way, Minnesota. 3-on-1. Kaprizov moves in back across. They score! Eric Zinek with the game winner.
Nieto near the blue line. Over for Carlson. Puts it through. They score. It's redirected in the slot. It should be Carlson's goal, and it's 3-0 San Jose.
TSN 1200.
Oh, to be in Montreal today. Oh, man, that was ugly last night. Fortunately, there were 5,000 empty seats, or at least 5,000 empty seats. Habs drew only just over 16,000 for their game last night against San Jose, what ended up being a 5-0 whitewash by the Sharks, who, by the way, are in town to play the Sens tomorrow. But for Montreal, only team in the league without a point so far this year, they're 0-4 for the first time in 25 seasons. It's ugly. Let's get right to the phone lines and welcome our next guest. A presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. He was in the broadcast booth last night to watch that game. Here's Dave Poulin this morning. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, JR. I'm not sure what you're talking about. It's a beautiful sunny morning in Montreal. It's a beautiful fall day. It's crisp. It's absolutely gorgeous out. And yeah, there weren't a lot of happy people there last night, without a doubt. And, you know, it's such a contradiction because people are so happy to be out and at the games. And there were many nights last season when my broadcast partner Brian Mudrick and I would walk the two blocks back to the hotel, and with the curfew and nobody in the seats, there wasn't a single person. Like, we wouldn't see one single person two block walk. Well, there were a lot of people last night, and not as much grumbling as you might expect. I think, you know, even as frustrating as it's been in the start, I think there's still a lot of cred in the bank from the run last year. I really do. And a lot of understanding that this team has gone over some changes in the summer and that it might take a little time. So maybe not quite as, you know, as dire as it looks from the outside.
Mm. Do they boo the broadcasters when the Habs put on a poor performance? On
they
the walk
do
back?
Not. Okay. They do not, and Brian was terrific last night. You know, as terrific as you can be in a 5-0 call. But, you know, San Jose is another team that not only do we not know much about them, but we don't know much about them. I mean, you've got them coming in, and there's some players on the rosters, guys, that you're simply going to say, you know, who exactly is that? And I know there's one with a little bit of Ottawa history, and Jonathan Dolan, who scored his first two career goals last night in his second career game. And you know, we actually did the story because Alex Burrows was on the bench for Montreal, and that was the trade between Ottawa and Vancouver when Dolan, the second round pick of the Sens, went to West, and now he's in San Jose. But, you know, they've got some guys in that squad that you simply don't know a lot about, and you're doing your homework and your research, and you're saying, yeah, you know what, there's some interesting guys here, and they're clearly led by their two-star defensemen, and their two guys were really good last night. Carlson was good, and so was Brent Burns.
Pooley, could you sum it up as much as fresh new energy for San Jose, and for whatever reason, just not a great vibe around the Habs right now?
Yeah, it didn't start well, and it kind of snowballed from there, and it was down. They were down 2-0, and then killed a couple penalties and drew momentum from it, and it was a late goal. It ended up being Carlson's goal where he just fired it from the point across at an angle, and it went off, I believe, Ben Chiarot's skate into the net, and that totally seemed to deflate Montreal. Like, they battled back using the energy of the penalty kill, and they're not skating like they were skating. You can look and say, okay, there's been changes and what's going on, but they're not attacking through the neutral zone with speed, and they're not supporting the puck like they do when they're at their best. And so what it's leading to is a lot of one-on-one play and a lot of mishandles. Caulfield struggled early last night. He had a couple scoring chances as the game progressed. But to a man, I would imagine that they would tell you they can play better. And when it snowballs like this early in the year, and I know we've talked already about how things get magnified early in the year. You know, if this is early December, you're going through a bad stretch. If it's the start of the year, it's a disaster. And already you know, before game four, people are talking about whether you're going to make the playoffs. Well, it's game, you know, it's the 19th of October. We can't be talking about the playoffs. We're going to be talking about the next shift and the next period, the next game.
If you were Dominique Ducharme and you're just trying to steady the ship, let alone get it going in the right direction, what would be the one or two things you would do right now just to try to get things back and going in the right direction?
I'd work on breakouts starting right at my own goal line, JR, and I'd have close puck support. And when Montreal was good through the neutral zone, they were allowed to have players like Jeff Petrie joining the play because of how well they supported the puck. And, you know, puck support, I think, is one of the most underrated things in hockey. And when I get my head up and look for a pass, what options do I have? Do I only have one? Do I have two? And when I taught it to young kids, I would put the puck, you know, on your stick as the quarterback with the ball. And if the quarterback's got the ball, everybody that's a receiver on the field is looking at him with his hands in a ready position to catch the ball. And yet, when someone's got the puck, you've got four other guys looking in a different direction or skating away, or their stick is off the ice, and you've got to have four receivers available for the puck carrier. And that's not happening in Montreal right now at all. And a lot of isolation and a lot of one-on-one, and guys are admirably trying to play well one-on-one and beat somebody, but that's not how it works. So I'd take the puck back to my own goal line, and I'd make 10 or 12 or 14 passes up the ice, and none of them would be longer than 5 feet.
Do you like the makeup of Dvorak with Drouin and Anderson and the makeup of Caulfield with Suzuki and Toffoli? And if that's the case, do you just give it time, Pooley?
I do. He already shifted away last night, and he put Caulfield with Gallagher and Adam Brooks. And Caulfield got his scoring chances when he was with those two guys. He had one on the power play, and then he had a couple with those two guys. I think there's still some work to do in terms of what works. I do like the components of Drouin, Dvorak, and Anderson. If you're going to say, okay, here's the components of a line, you know, you've got Anderson, the big power forward on one side, you've got the smart, you know, fairly conservative centerman who's defensively responsible in Dvorak, and then you've got the talented, you know, play driver on the left side in Drouin. So the components are there, and they looked good during the exhibition season when you're playing against lineups that aren't fully NHL lineups. I mean, Dvorak had a four-point game and looked tremendous, you know, in the exhibition season. I'd be a little more patient with that one than I would maybe with Suzuki, Toffoli, but they've had their success, you know, and Caulfield. But I think Caulfield's still one you've got to work to figure out exactly where he fits in your lineup and how it's going to play out.
How much, if any, do you look at the long playoff run, the shorter than you know, usual offseason? How much do you pin a part of that on Montreal's slow start, if any?
Oh, I think it's a big part of it. And I don't think it's just the past season. I think it's the past two seasons for a lot of teams on what they went through and, you know, the changes in the locker room, and, you know, you've removed some pretty significant components from that locker room. You know, start with Carey Price and then go to Shea Weber and go to Philippe Dano. And then say, you know what, Corey Perry had a pretty big impact on this hockey team last year. And so you just take those four players alone and remove them, and there's going to be a different dynamic and a different buzz, and, you know, things are going to be handled differently. And you know, Brandon Gallagher is a leader, but you can't just try and lead. The best way he can lead is to go out and play well and, you know, and be a factor on the ice. That's the best way to lead. And so I do think it's a significant factor, not as much for physical fatigue as for mentally what this team goes through. And, you know, I've been through long runs where, quite frankly, even with a full off season, you know, when you play until, you know, regular season until early June and you're banged up coming out of it, you know, seasons when it took me 6 weeks till physically I could get back in the gym. So anytime that compresses like that, it's certainly a factor, JR.
And they were the 18th best team, and you've taken away three key components, Pooley, so we'll see what they are. Simple change, would you bring up Primo and start him next game?
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's one I would consider. I'm not sure exactly where they are with Samuel Montembeau, you know, in terms of how comfortable they are. They picked him up on waivers, and we've seen him a couple of times, and you've got to get Jake Allen some rest at some point. There's no doubt about that. You know, if you're looking at your schedule, you've got to get him some rest. You have a back-to-back, not till the end of the month coming up. And so you can run Jake Allen, but he had been really good until last night. And once again, there were a couple of deflections, and I'm not thing. He was clearly at fault on an easy one last night, but a power play goal and a couple of deflections, and you've got to get him some rest at some point. And when you look at the early schedule, this is the deceptive part early in the year, guys. There was only, I believe, two playoff teams from last year in their first dozen games. And so you start 0-4 and you're looking ahead, and you've got one of them coming up in Carolina. But then, you know, all of the Detroit, Seattle's, Anaheim's, they've all won games. And so, you know, even San Jose coming in last night, no one's really picked them to be a juggernaut in the West, and they looked just fine last night. So there's so many unknowns early in the year. You know, you're looking at a 3-0 Buffalo team, and you're saying, well, you know, that was a game we looked at in the schedule and said, okay, well, you know, we've got to handle that game. Boy, in the early in the year, there's a lot of unknowns about what everybody else is doing and teams they haven't seen in a year plus to start with.
Last one on Montreal, for reasons that we're all aware of, Carolina-Montreal is a rivalry, and it's the Hurricanes coming to town to Montreal tomorrow. Is this a good time for Montreal? If we're talking about needing to dial in more emotionally to games, is this a great time for a visit by a team like Carolina?
It shouldn't really. It really shouldn't. They should be worrying about, you know, what's happening in-house and not the outside distractions of it. But I think it's a good storyline, and I think once the game starts, the storyline will end. I really do. I don't think it's going to be, you know, an ongoing one, you know, that dramatically affects the fortunes of either team. I think it's, you know, they signed a young player because they had cap space in Kotkaniemi, and he goes down there, and, you know, it's an exciting time for him. But I don't think it's going to be an ongoing, overpowering storyline.
Isn't the rivalry between the managers, Pooley, and nothing to do with the players? No, but ultimately, right? I mean, I don't think anybody's mad at Kotkaniemi or mad at Aho or mad at Dvorak. It's more, hey, this is between Donnie Waddell and Mark Bergevin.
Yeah, I think it is. And I don't think, you know, you might even go higher than that. It might be the owner in Carolina who acted more than Donnie Waddell did. But, you know, so it may be more in the media room beforehand, if that's the case, Simmer.
I was struck as I watched the game last night and turned it on, at least, by the number of empty seats at the Bell Centre. It's just something we're not used to. It's been a story here in Ottawa early. We're seeing empty seats across Canada. And you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins had a 14-year sellout streak and last night as well. Just from the Montreal point of view, was it a topic last night? And how jarring was it for you doing a lot of Montreal games? And last year, obviously, no fans for much of it, but jarring to see that many empty seats in Montreal.
Yeah, I thought about it right during the first period, and there's still a comfort level, I think, you know, as we go out, as we're starting to venture out in our own worlds into restaurants and things like that. You know, neighborhood restaurants that we know are always full and aren't quite full yet. So I think there's a comfort level with people, and I think there's also a corporate trickle-down comfort level on the seating and where they're going and what they're doing with them, because we know that corporations own a number of these seats as well. So maybe the communication to get them in the right hands of people who are willing to go down to the game and get back into it. So I think it's going to take time. I don't think the fact that we technically open the buildings to full capacity is going to mean they're right back to full capacity. I think it's got to be a phase up to that part of it as well.
I was thinking last night as I watched that game, if you're, you know, and we know the American-based teams don't like to play in the fall because it's football and people aren't paying attention to hockey. And so the Canadian teams have an inordinately high number of home games early on in the season. If you're a team like San Jose, isn't, you know, would you lobby the schedule maker, any team, to come play in Canada in the early part of the year, knowing that if there's ever going to be empty seats and a lack of atmosphere, this would be the time of year. And what a great time to go play games as opposed to March when everybody's all in.
Yeah, I think so. In, you know, in different buildings, I know that football is such a huge, huge factor. I mean, in Philadelphia, it was with the Eagles and you know, as much as anything. And we played right beside each other. So you were always cognizant of that through the fall. But, you know, I think, you know, these schedule makers, it's eerily similar year to year, Jared. When you really study a schedule, it doesn't vary a lot. You know, normally teams are doing the same thing within a structure from year to year. And so I don't think that changes a whole lot. But I do agree from your standpoint, you know, if you, and San Jose had kind of a weird one because they started with one game at home and then moved them immediately to the East Coast. And, you know, if I'm San Jose, I like getting on the road early and I like getting the guys together early, but it'll be even happier when they start 3-0.
Even from a health standpoint, Pooley, a lot better to come through when the weather's like this in Canada versus the middle of winter, right? But it
you
is.
You can't factor that in. Yeah.
No, but you come from a warm market. Yeah.
Yeah, most of those guys are so used to that anyway.
Yeah.
And you know, you're in and out of cities now so quickly that it's not as much of a factor as probably we would think.
Thoughts on Ottawa now? Lineup, Matt Murray hopping back in. And do you like Stützle playing with your boy Tierney and Alex Formanton on the right side?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I like the thought of putting him back with Pinto and Connor Brown, and principally because of Connor Brown and the play that he has. And so you've got the advantage of options because of how well Chris Tierney started and how well Alex Formanton's skating. And we spoke about, you know, anybody benefiting from the absence of Brady Tkachuk early, it was Alex Formanton, you know, who jumped up on that line with Norris and Batherson and was so strong in doing it and got so confident in his own game, and now has carried that over. So there's tons of speed there for Tierney in the middle. Tierney's got to continue to play with pace, and I think when he struggles, he doesn't play with pace, but right now he is, and so that's a real positive. But, you know, Stützle, I think he's a multi-dimensional player, and, you know, he can drive a line on his own as well. So once again, you know, similar to what I spoke about earlier, when guys are playing well, then coaches have options. And it's not that you're not doing it out of where are we going to put this guy. You're doing it out of, boy, we have options of where to put, you know, Timmy Stützle right now. And so there'll be a lot of excitement in the building, and then the magnifying glass won't be on him. It'll be on that first line with Brady Tkachuk, and I understand the theory behind Pinto, Connor Brown, and Paul playing together because you're maximizing what Paul is. So when you're putting the lines together, you know, that's another factor you have to think about, is maximizing each individual within what you want to do as a team.
Also on Tierney report, or found out he had a bad back, heard it before camp last year, Pooley, I know you had played with some injuries. What is it like to go through a year also down 12 pounds? Well, it's obvious, but what would the difference be for a healthy player like Tierney?
Well, physically, it's huge because you're starting behind it every day. I mean, when you start most days on the training table to get loosened up to play, that's a tough way to play hockey. It simply is. And then you learn to compensate because you're a pro and you've played, you know, you've played as much as you've played. You can compensate and survive, but that's what you're doing. So you're not playing on the over edge. You're just playing to survive out there. And, you know, I've gone through years where I've had lingering injuries and I had particularly leg muscle injuries, and you're not skating at 100%. Now, you can be effective at your own 70%, but it's not your 100%. And you get in that mode, and mentally, physically, it takes so much out of you. So I think to be 100% healthy and, you know, and then have people understand that as well and have confidence in you, because you know when a coach has confidence in you, and right now he does in Chris Tierney.
Just an overall, before we let you go, we talked about Montreal obviously being 0-4. Chicago doesn't have a win in four games. Winnipeg doesn't have a win in three games. And then we've got Buffalo at 3-0, incredibly so. Minnesota is 3-0. Edmonton 3-0. At you know, back from your times in management with the Leafs and just as a coach, and how many games kind of do you put under your belt before you kind of go, okay, I have a little bit of an idea of what I have here?
Yeah, so much depends on you know, coming in, what you were thinking. And, you know, we have a lot of unknowns now. We have a lot of teams we haven't seen. And we're assessing, you know, what the New York Islanders are going to be because of what they did last year. But, you know, we didn't really see them. We didn't know about Chicago. I thought Chicago would get off to a great start just with the additions of Fleury and Jonathan Toews and Seth Jones. And so, you know, in terms of how much time, the American Thanksgiving was always, it was late November, but that gave you about 20 games in, and I think that's still a fair barometer to assess your squad and see where you're at.
All right, good stuff. Do you stay in Montreal for the game tomorrow night?
I do. I'm here through tomorrow night, and then I have San Jose and Toronto right back on Friday night in Toronto.
So what is Dave Poulin going to do on an off day in Montreal? What kind of trouble can you get into?
A lot of catch-up stuff. It'll be a good research day for me, actually. And, you know, I'll dig deeper into everything I'm watching around the league.
Nice. Or maybe lunch in Crescent Street and who knows what after that.
That's a possibility.
There you go. All right, good stuff. Appreciate the time as always. Look forward to talking to you again on Friday.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
All right, welcome back. 844. A text comes in at 12-1200 when you text us. Standard message and great supply. The Habs suck so bad right now, they're going to change their colors to blue and white. Whoa, that's a double broadside right there. If you're a Sens fan right now, and you've been taking it from all sides for a lot of time, and again, we're only three games into the season, but doesn't it feel good where everybody's sort of talking about the issues are somewhere else, even just for the here and now.
And also, Jerry, it's not a slow start. And this is also parallels on and off the ice. Let's not forget 2017 with Mr. Duchesne, then started the whole draft pick, first-round draft pick, right? They've already given up their first-round draft pick to Arizona. Now, it's a better of the two that Arizona gets. And it's, if you're Montreal, here's the thing. It's top 10 protected. Well, I sure as hell don't want to finish 12th and give Arizona the pick and take Carolina's, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the just so many things. This is not a good hockey team. They were 18th last year. They got a hot goaltender. They got a very good defensive core. You have eliminated Shea Weber. You have eliminated Deneau. When then Carey Price is going to come back? You have added the likes of, and I respect Jonathan Drouin, nice fella, nice that he's gotten over, but let's not kid ourselves that he's ever been part of a long playoff run. Mike Hoffman, I think old Devo, the last time he won a game was when he played in junior. I think that there's a lot more than just a slow start. I don't like the makeup of the hockey team. Slow on the back end, not much skill, and small up front once again, terrible on faceoffs. I don't think, my point is, I don't think this is just about a slow start. I don't think this is a very good hockey team, and I don't think the energy around that club right now is very good.
Tony Marinaro from TSN 690 is going to join us after 9 o'clock this morning. Speaking of which, this text comes in. Good morning. I was in Montreal last week on Friday and listened to Tony's show, and was he livid. Told everyone if he wasn't paid to watch the games, he wouldn't. That was Friday. They lost Saturday, played reasonably well against the Rangers, but lost. And then El Stinko El Grande last night versus San Jose. Yeah. So we'll find out how fired up Tony is. Yeah. We'll give him a little warm-up to his own show when he joins us after 9 this morning. It was funny. I texted Simmer last night. We were thinking about a guest, and I just texted, Tony Marinaro, question mark? Simmer, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then Tony checks it, ha-ha, you don't know it exactly. We're not exactly getting him on to talk about. And they still think that because we're Ottawa Radio, that it's a big rivalry thing. I think, and again, it is a rivalry, but it's more humorous to us, right? In the sense of, and I'm not, I don't hate Montreal per se, but it's just an interesting storyline. And also to the market share, it speaks to, I'd say, different than Toronto. The vibe is that it's very high or very low. And, you know, people can argue what you want about Toronto, but that's the emotion of the Montreal market that quickly. Like, we're talking about Tony after going to the finals last year, after game 3 already being really upset. And all the storylines. I mean, is Caulfield going to get 30 goals? Is he going to get 40? Suzuki's got a new contract. Devo's better than Kotkaniemi. And then early in the season, absolutely nothing's happening for any of those guys offensively other than a little bit from Durant.
As a wise man once said, flatter than pee on a plate right now is the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. And that's why I think tomorrow with Carolina coming to town, and you know, I'll respectfully disagree with Dave Poulin. I do think there's you know, and maybe it starts off the ice, but I think that filters down to the players. I think getting Carolina coming in, Kotkaniemi will be on the ice. We know that. I think getting a little bit of emotion, normally a Carolina coming to town is not going to get you fired up if you're Montreal. But given the history of what's gone on between the two, and it's probably more of an ownership level even more than GMs.
Well,
I do think anything that can get my team stoked, I'm all for at this point.
Yeah, see, I would look at this and actually ask, okay, guys, let me figure this out. We offered Aho an offer sheet. It didn't work, and okay, he got paid. We turned around, and we lost Kotkaniemi, although 6.1 I'm sure is too much of an overpayment. We took the first-round pick, which is fine, but we've now flipped that out for Dvorak, and the fellow that made all these transactions is actually going to be in L.A. next year. I don't think it filters down to the players whatsoever, JR. Unless Molson is coming in trying to rally the troops, I think everybody in Montreal is thrilled that Kotkaniemi got the money. He's a likable guy. If he was disliked, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't see any transfer at all, other than you are playing terrible right now. You need anything, but this is really, you know, this is quite simply between two owners and two general managers. And like I said, I don't think if that's a rallying call,
right?
I'm looking
anywhere. I'm looking anywhere to get myself fired up if I'm Montreal.
That Kotkaniemi,
right?
He didn't want to be here.
Money on the board, man. Who's scoring the winning goal tonight against Carolina? All right. On this day, Red Sox fans who are disappointed over last night, probably in the umpy more than anything, take comfort in the fact it was on this day in 2004 that the Red Sox completed what is still to this day the only comeback from 3-0 down in a best-of-seven playoff series. They won Game 7 in New York, 10-3. It was over early. Johnny Damon had a home run, I believe, in the first inning, and then had a grand slam, I think, in the third inning. It was like 6 or 7-0 by the third inning, and 10-3 ended up being the final. Red Sox completed the big comeback and, of course, went on to win the World Series. They beat Colorado or St. Louis. They beat one of them in 04 and one in 07.
I think Colorado was the... No,
they went to St. Louis the first one because that's Fever Pitch the movie.
That's
They ended up sweeping the Cards, right?
Yes. Right.
And also, JR, firmly on the bandwagon, I just moved to Rhode Island. I'm driving down to Bridgeport, scouting for the Leafs and doing a hell of a job. I'm listening to the game on the radio. I'm in the lobby of the arena, as is everybody else, because Bridgeport, if you've been there, is actually Yankees territory. I'm, along with every fan in the building, is down underneath. And old Johnny Damon, first of all, I don't think Hammer anybody could stay alive better in the history of baseball than him.
Every
home run he hit was just that kind of little bit of a pop over the
short feet, right field porch.
Almost fouled everything off. But that, when you go back, JR, you have to watch it again to comprehend. And this would be like the Sens, I'm assuming, playing the Leafs and then going on to win the Cup. The Caps beating the Penguins, winning a Cup. 03. It was like, I remember being in that market. It was like they won the first game. It's like, please don't do this to us. Get it over with. Go to six. Go to whatever. Was Schilling game seven or game six?
Game six.
You know, and then you're saying even to game seven, this is exactly what will happen in Boston. We've come all the way back and we're going to lose. And then of all things, old Terry brings, remember when Pedro came in? And I think that's when the Yankees started to heat up and you're thinking, oh my God, they're going to come back at this point. And sure enough, they win. It really is. So, like, it's everything that you would ask for in trying to exorcise the demons back then.
It's funny that just the little touchstones you remember from that. So the Yankees are up 3-0. Game four, the Red Sox are down in the bottom of the ninth inning, and Mariano Rivera comes in to, the greatest closer of all time to close the deal. Dave Roberts, who is now the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, comes in as a pinch runner and steals second base and eventually comes around to score the tying run. Yeah. David Ortiz hits the home run in extra innings. Joe Buck has the great call.
Perfect call.
Of saying, Red Sox win. We'll see you tonight for game five. I remember that. Okay. I remember you just say bloody sock. Yeah. Everybody remembers what that was. And then most people actually don't remember much about game seven other than the fact that
there was a blowout.
Red Sox won. Yeah.
I think it was Kevin Brown that started for the Yankees, and he did not last very long. It was done, and I think it was a grand slam for Johnny Damon as well.
Yeah, he had two home runs. The second one was a grand slam.
There you go.
Yeah. And also you think back to, and I hope I have this right, guys, on, oh, God, I'm blanking on some of the players now. Was it Lowe that was the third baseman? He was tossed into the Beckett trade that they had to take his salary. He was
Mark Lowe?
Yeah, or Kevin Lowe, no?
No, I think it was Kevin Millar.
Oh, sorry. But I don't want to do that, but it's Lowe. Anyways, the third baseman hammer. We got to figure it out.
Third baseman.
Yeah. And just the cast of characters are involved. All the rumors about the Red Sox and all the players drinking before the game. Remember, they said they were all taking a shot of whiskey.
Having shots.
Shot of whiskey and then go out and play. And
they call themselves the Dirtbags, right?
I believe so.
It was Kevin Millar.
Was Kevin Millar. Yeah, he kind of started that with Schilling. And
it's a bit of a lovable cast of characters, really. I mean, if you didn't have a horse in the race, you probably rooted for the Red Sox for a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah.
Anyway, that happened on this day 17 years ago, Red Sox. And we'll see what happens today in Game 5 of the ALCS. They're playing Houston. Controversial moment last night. If you missed it, in the top of the ninth inning, Houston is up. It's a tie 2-2. They've got two strikes on Castro, the hitter, and Nathan Eovaldi, the Red Sox pitcher, appears to throw strike three, a called strike three, which would have ended the inning. Instead, it's called a ball. And from there, the Astros go on to score seven runs with two out in the top of the ninth inning and win the game 9-2. So that started our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. And the one of the big topics today for sure is going to be, do you want to see, and they're experimenting with it in the minors in baseball, do you want to see them move eventually to robot umpires, essentially, or a robot calling the balls and strikes? Still got a human back there to call plays at the plate and to say ball or strike, but it's actually technology-driven. Would you want to see that? And I love my 50-50 when we get a web poll question. Do you want to see human umpires or robot umpires? We are about 400 votes in, and it's exactly 50-50. Human umpire versus robot umpire. So let us know what you think at tsn1200.ca. It's our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question of the day. All right, coming up next hour, we'll have Sens Sharks tickets. This will kick off a giveaway we're going to have for each and every home game. We're going to have a pair of 100-level tickets to give away on our show for every home game the rest of the season for the Sens. There'll also be a pair of 100-level seats to give away and the drive for every single home game the rest of the season. Now, today we'll do kind of a one-off contest. We'll do that again tomorrow for the game on Saturday versus the Rangers. And then on Friday, we're going to have our first edition. It's been on the shelf collecting dust for a long time. You know it, you love it. If you've been listening for a long time, it's the return of Sens and Sensibility. Yes, Sens and Sensibility. We'll review the rules down the road because it's pretty simple. I had to simmer go, how did that contest, because we have a lot of, how did that contest work again? Oh, that one. Yeah. Okay, so we'll do that on Friday, and that will be for the tickets for Monday's game against the Washington Capitals. Okay, all right, let's take a break. 8:55 again. Tony Marinaro is going to join us in about 15 minutes or so from now. As we roll on here, we'll talk some Habs with him and, of course, continue to get you set for the Sens. They'll get the Sharks next after San Jose took care of Montreal last night 5-0. So we'll do that when we return right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Happy birthday to Ottawa Red Black original Antoine Pruno, turns 32 years old today. Antoine, the Red Blacks, getting set for their next game coming up Saturday in Hamilton against the Ticats. And Paul Appelese confirming, well, he told us Monday that Duck Hodges would dress for the game. He confirmed yesterday that Duck Hodges, they've actually got a package of plays for Duck Hodges. So he's actually going to see some action. Maybe might be just short yardage stuff. Maybe that leads to something else. But regardless, the Duck will be in the house at Tim Hortons Field coming up on Saturday. Duck Hodges guested with Lever Sage last night on the Ottawa Red Blacks radio show. He's an interesting character, needless to say, as his personality fits his nickname. Let's put it that way. Here's Duck Hodges on what he likes about Ottawa.
I will say that I'm impressed. I've told a lot of people this. I'm impressed with kind of how clean it is as far as a city. You know, lots of times you go to these kind of bigger cities and they're not very clean. And it's been super clean. There's some good people here, some good food.
He loves us, baby. We love it when Americans come to our city and they like our city, especially because it's clean.
Yeah, it is, Joe Jr. You drive along the United States interstate, you're like, how can somebody lose that many hubcaps? How could be that much garbage? Why won't anybody pick it up? And I could see him and Lee hanging out. I could see them being super buds. Maybe even getting in the buggy after a couple of pints and going to Trevor Harris's house. Hey, maybe
throw it.
That won't happen.
Yeah. And as far as the Duckmeister, is he a mobile quarterback chair?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He can move around a little bit.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And we're going to see him.
That's why he'd have the short packages.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And it's just a good way to get yourself introduced, right, to the game and step in, kind of put your toe into the water, as it were. You can hear the interview in its entirety. As I said, he's an interesting guy, and it's an interesting listen. You can find the Duck Hodges interview on our website at tsn1200.ca. Again, they'll play Hamilton coming up on Saturday and down to the final four games of the season, believe it or not.
I want him right at the end there. He's got to have a big spittoon in. I just want to hear the spit. Hey, I hope it works out because I do. I think they could use, let's face it, little face on the franchise, a little bit of fun, and let's hope the Duck works out.
Yeah, absolutely. NFL, by the way, should remind you that Week 7 kicks off tomorrow. The Thursday night game is Denver and Cleveland. Baker Mayfield, who's battling a shoulder injury, said, I'm in there. I want to play. Now, whether the Browns are going to let him play remains to be seen, but he wants to play. We know that that they're going to be a little bit shorthanded. They've got injuries now. Kareem Hunt is on the DL. He's on the injured list, which is at least 3 weeks, but he's expected to miss 4 to 6. He's got a calf injury. Not sure what's up with Nick Chubb. It was up in the air as to whether he was going to play. He missed the last game. Mayfield's hurt. Like, this is a beaten down Browns team right now that everybody had such high hopes for early in the season and now has run upon some troubled times. Fortunately, the Denver Broncos aren't any screaming hell either these days. They've lost 3 games in a row. So that's your Thursday nighter to kick off Week 7. Make sure you get your picks in for our TSN 1200 Pick'em Pool. Presented by Baton Rouge Steakhouse and Bar. It's a brand new game every week. It's free to play. You'll find it on our website, tsn1200.ca. Click on the banner. Fill out your picks. It's straight up. Couldn't be any easier. If you get more right than anybody else in a given week, you win the $100 gift certificate to enjoy some delicious ribs at Baton Rouge Steakhouse and Bar. Okay, we'll take a break, get you the latest news, run down a very busy scoreboard for a Tuesday night in October, and come back and we'll talk more about what's going on down the 417 in Montreal. Everybody is resting easy right now in Ottawa. Two wins in three games. Tkachuk is signed. All is right with the world. In Montreal, it's a raging tire fire. And the man who's got the match is Tony Marinaro from TSN 690. And he'll join us next, right here on TSN 1200.